Welcome to Inspirational Tales and an episode of With Kindness, where I am joined by guests who are making a difference in the world by helping others and spreading kindness. So today I'm joined on the podcast by Alex Paparakis from the Urban Bushland Initiative. Welcome to the podcast, Alex.
Thanks, Jess. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem at all. So could you just start off by telling everyone listening what the Urban Bushland Initiative is, which is what you founded?
The Urban Bushlands Initiative is a not-for-profit that focuses on revegetating urban spaces throughout Melbourne with Indigenous flora to help our local wildlife.
So were you always someone, like as a kid, were you always someone that wanted to help the environment or did environmental causes or anything like that?
No, I don't think I was. I look back on younger days and there's no real straight out suggestion to me that I was really caring about the environment as much as I do now. But I do recall in grade one reading a little book about deforestation, especially in equatorial countries, and just thinking that was a bit ridiculous. So I think it's always been there. It's just never something I've pursued until recently.
And what was your childhood like?
My childhood was really enjoyable. My mother's a scientist, so I got exposed to science at quite an early age. And that kind of guided me toward the career I follow now. I'm a medical scientist. And my parents were very insistent that I do everything. So I played instruments and played a lot of sport. So it was very full on, but very enjoyable.
So you had a bit of everything
as a kid? I did. And I still try to carry that into adulthood, but it gets tough.
Yeah. Time constraints.
Very much so.
So when you finished school, what did you do? So you went to uni and you studied to be a medical scientist. Is that something that you always knew you were going to do?
Yeah, well, pretty much. In year seven, I did a project on viruses for science and I thought they were the coolest thing ever. And so then I thought, I'll go down this pathway. Science is cool. Biology is very cool. Then I followed that. And in uni, I did a lecture or a course, sorry, on genetics. And there was one particular lecture in first year that sold me on the whole concept of genetics. And so I followed that, graduated, and then got this role. Yeah.
Wow, that's good. And you enjoy it?
I do.
Yeah, it's good to hear. You did run for council not too long ago.
Yes.
Can you tell us why you did that?
It was a multi-pronged reason. Across from where I currently live, there is a very large and very inappropriate development. And I was very frustrated at not only how inappropriate the development was, but at how willing to disobey the permits the developers were. And I kept contacting council and the response I got was mediocre. Now, it's a different council, not from the one that I ran for, but I thought, well, that's just unfair. The little guy is getting trod on by the big guy and we don't have a way of stopping that. So what's the best thing that I can do right now? And then I thought I could run for council. So I did. It was that. The other reason was I wanted to instigate some kind of climate change action at a local level and do it from a position where I felt like I could allocate funding for that. And lastly, I knew the mayor, Samantha Byrne, of my council, and she told me that I should run. I was like, okay, well, that's cool. I'll give that a shot. I was close, but unfortunately didn't make it.
How old were you at the time?
I was 24. That was June 2020. It was during the pandemic, which made it a fun experience.
But I'm sure that gave you a lot of experience, though, in doing things like that.
Very much so. I feel a lot more comfortable approaching random people, sending emails and standing my ground when it comes to things that we need done for the Urban Bushlands Initiative. If people are complaining, locals or councillors, I know how to respond to their complaints in a way that is not aggressive but firm.
Yeah, sounds really good. And to be such a young person, I'll say, at the time, still a young person now, not that long ago, but to actually take the initiative to do something to try and change what you're seeing, I think is so admirable because a lot of people wouldn't do that. Yeah, well done. But then that you didn't just stop there. Like we were saying at the beginning, the Urban Bushland Initiative you have founded, when and why did you decide to start that?
That came about in my head at the end of Black Summer 2019-2020. I thought, I just woke up and I was checking the radar for fires, not because I live near them, but just out of morbid curiosity. And I just kept thinking, this is so horrible. This hurts me quite deep. What can I try to do about it? Surely there's something I can do. And then I thought, maybe I can plant a million trees. So I called a good friend of mine and I said, hey, do you want to plant a million trees with me? He was like, hell yeah, man, let's do it. So I was like, okay. And then I drove around my suburb and I noticed that although some nature strips have some trees on them, you could definitely fit a lot more. And we should. So I wrote down what I estimated is the amount of trees I could fit in my suburb. And then I emailed Samantha Byrne, the mayor of my council area, and she got back to me instantly and set up a meeting. And in that meeting, I was actually introduced to the conservation officer for Moonee Valley, Millicent Burke. And she was like, hey, this idea is great. I love your passion. But street trees are quite a difficult thing to plant. People pull them out. They need to be of a certain size. They need to be a certain species so they don't just drop their limbs. Have you considered joining a conservation group? And at the time, I didn't know there was friends groups at all in the area. And there are so many and they're so amazing. So I looked into that. And although I really liked what I saw, a lot of these friends groups are restricted to the location that they are friends of. So Friends of Still Creek will work in the Still Creek corridor. Friends of Moonee Valley, or Friends of Maribyrnong Valley, sorry, will work in the Maribyrnong Valley corridor. There's no real big organization that's trying to work in as many places as possible across Melbourne. Nor is there any organization that's focusing and has the ability to attract young people. So I decided to start my own with the idea of not being restricted to a location and being able to use my friends who are also quite passionate and their knowledge to attract as many young people as we can to these planting days.
Wow.
It's going okay.
So you've got the idea, this is what I'm going to do, but it's very different having an idea to actually implementing it and putting it in place. So how did you go from having the idea of this is what I'm going to do, I'm going to plant a million trees, to then actually starting it and being able to do it?
Oh, it was a long process because this started during 2020, so we really were restricted on what we could do. So we just had a meeting, our first AGM, and I looked up how incorporations worked, and I need to really emphasize the help I got from Moonee Valley's conservation team. They were and have been and still are incredible. And then after getting the committee going, we focused on our first planting site and where we'd want that to be, contacted Moonee Valley Council and asked about this planting site and if they would be interested in us working with them to find the volunteers and plant it out. And they were straight away, yes, young people, we love it. Your organization sounds great. I'm glad we could help you with this. And then we worked on which site, and over the next 2 years, we had many attempts at planting out a site and many failures because every time we had a date set, the restrictions were back in place.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It was quite unfortunate.
Yeah, because here in Victoria, we had those really long lockdowns.
Very long lockdowns. Yeah, and then it ended up, we finally got our first planting day in May this year, which was a small planting day, just to show me and my team the ropes. And we had 20 people put in 300 plants at a reserve along the Maribyrnong River, which was really nice. And that was in preparation for our big day, which we just had on August 14th. We were told by the council that there's 3,000 plants we need to get in the ground, so we needed at least 100 volunteers. And we got 140, and we got them all in within an hour. Which was really awesome. Yeah.
Good job.
It was awesome. We're very, very happy. So it's looking like a bright future for us, I think.
Well, it sounds fantastic. And to keep doing it, as obviously, like keep trying, even though things weren't necessarily going your way, it's a good trait to have to keep doing that. So well done.
It's stubbornness.
Oh, yeah. You know, it works sometimes. Sometimes maybe not so much. So how did you go about choosing the sites that you wanted to plant the trees in?
It was quite simple for us, actually. I just drove around my suburb and thought, well, this is a big empty expanse. I don't see many people using it, so I check it out a couple of times. Because a lot of the times when you're looking at these sites, there will be people who really like it for their dog running through or little sporting events they can have with their kids, which is fair enough. Mm-hmm. This is part of what we do in community. But there are many locations that you just don't think about throughout Melbourne that are just this plot of green land that the council has to spend money on to mow that no one uses, and that would serve a much better purpose if they were planted out with native flora or indigenous flora. So that's pretty much how we chose it, and then we talked to the council about it, and they'd say, yep, this is on our list, because for the council or the conservation team, they want to focus on sites that can be a part of wildlife and pollinator corridors. And so if these sites just happen to be on their list as well, then it goes very well for us.
So they've got a list of sites that they would potentially plant. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, very much so. They have a list of sites they want to plant and might plant in the future.
Oh, okay.
But they could do it by themselves, but then the local community would be frustrated because they're not involved.
Oh.
Yeah, a lot of the time the community hates planting because it's not theirs.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So the community wants to get involved and plant their trees themselves?
Yes, a lot of them do, and a lot of them think they don't. but we've found that they do when they join us. I'll give you a story about that. One of our members, his father is very much, not anti-green, but not really interested. So when he heard about the planting day and he was invited, he was like, oh, you know what? I'll come. I'll see it a little bit, but I might not partake. He came earliest. He planted the most plants.
Oh.
And he's gone back several times to check on how the plants are doing.
Oh, I love it. I love
And it's because it's his plants and he was a part of it. He doesn't see it as a waste of money. He sees it as something that's valuable and something that he can be a steward of.
I never would have thought of that, but it makes a lot of sense now that you've said that.
Yeah, very much, yeah.
Yeah. So to just with that, you said it's not a waste of money. Who actually funds this?
For the ones we've done so far, they've been council funded, but I wouldn't say fully council funded because the council applies for grants from the Victorian government and from the federal government. So part of it is council funding, and a certain amount is legally has to be allocated every year to greening in some respect. And then the conservation team applies for other grants from other organisations.
Okay.
In the future, we'll be looking at getting local businesses involved in grants as well and applying for grants ourselves from other organisations.
And do they supply the trees as well?
No, that all comes from some Indigenous nurseries. There's a lot of things that you don't know exist until you start looking into this space. There's quite a few nursery cooperatives throughout Melbourne that are focused purely on plants that grow in Melbourne or grow in the outer regions of Melbourne. And so we use them, yeah.
Did you have to learn a lot? I can imagine this would be a huge learning curve.
There's so much to learn. But it's so exciting. I didn't know, for example, that the western part of Melbourne from Avenel, Heights, Keilor region, pushing right across to the border of South Australia, is or was the Victorian volcanic grass plains.
Okay.
And most of it, it's now critically endangered. There's only 0.05% of it left. So if you ever go for a drive that way, if you can imagine what it used to look like, it'd just be fields and fields of grass and wildflowers as opposed to what it is now. And so that was a big, big learning curve. It wasn't forests. And then you have to learn about what the different plants can do, which plants might be best for the environment you're putting in, stuff like that.
Yeah. And not just that as well, organising, like working with the council, finding the trees, getting a committee together. How did you go about that? How did you go about getting it? Are these all your friends or?
Yeah. So the secretary is my girlfriend. So she got roped into it. So now she loves it all. And then the various committee members are either my friends or friends that my friends have said are excited to be a part of it. Yeah. It's been quite easy in that respect, which
is
nice.
That's really good.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people do want to help with this sort of thing. They just don't know what to do. Like I was saying to you before we started recording, it's such a big issue, environmental issues, and sometimes it can seem like it's just so big that, oh, there's nothing I can do. You know, I don't know what to do. So I think when there's something someone can do, I think a lot of people would want to get involved, and you've seen that obviously with what you're doing. So
very much so. Yeah. People love the opportunity, as you said. And if you can provide that opportunity, then not only can they participate, but then you can unlock all of the things that they've been thinking about for a while and the ideas that they have that you might not have.
Yeah. So what happens on these planting days?
Oh, for us or for our volunteers?
For everybody.
For everybody. For us, we get there early. We set up at our big planting day. We set up our marquee. We had to get toilets organized as well, because if you have a certain amount of volunteers, you have to have toilets.
Oh, really? For an hour?
Yeah. There's a lot of red tape. We meet our... because we always do this with the councils of the area, because we want to include them as well. And also they're much more knowledgeable than we are.
Mm-hmm.
So we get there, we chat to the conservation team. The marquees get set up. We had our local musician rock up. We had a crepe van as well, and coffee van get all set up as well. So when people get there, they have a coffee and a crepe, and they can go off and plant.
Oh, wow.
And then, yeah, and then we have our green team come through with all the plants, and they start laying out the plants in the holes that have been pre-drilled for the plants for people to come through and put in the ground. And that's,
so they're already dug.
Yeah, yeah, the holes are okay. Pre-dug. Yeah, digging 3,000 holes would not be fun.
Who does that?
It's contractors.
Okay.
Yeah, contracted team come through and do that. A lot of the soil is very clay-like, so it would be a big ask, I think, if we got our volunteers to do that.
So it's pretty easy then for the volunteers to then plant the trees.
Very much so. We don't really want to make it too difficult on the volunteers, because they'll look back on the day as a fun day as opposed to a really hard-working day if they had to do all the work.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm presuming they're small plants as well, so they're not heavy to carry or anything.
Oh, like no. They're tube stock. So they're about... Oh,
tiny.
Yeah, they're maybe two hand lengths, if you include the plant.
Yeah. Yep. And then what happens afterwards? So once everything's been planted, what happens in terms of maintenance of the sites, all of that?
So we currently work with council and use contractors to maintain the site afterward, because it's vital that only the certain weeds are actually sprayed. And they use spray. Unfortunately, we can't avoid the use of pesticides or herbicides, sorry. So they come through and they'll maybe every couple of months look at the site, spray any weeds that are popping up, maybe put some new mulch on in the next year to help with the water retention. And in the summer, if the plants are looking particularly thirsty, they'll come through with a water truck and water the plants through. And then in a year or two, all the plant guards can be taken off the plants and they can be exposed properly, and hopefully they've grown enough to help self-maintain the site.
My gosh, so this is a big team effort.
It's a huge effort, which is fun, but can be quite exhausting.
Yeah. Especially when you've got a full-time job.
Yes.
How do you find time? I always ask people this. How do you find time to do this on top of having a full-time job?
I am frantic often, but I also try to exercise, I think is vital, because if you can exercise for an hour straight after work, then when you get home, at least for me, I feel quite fresh and ready, and then make my dinner, make my lunch for tomorrow, and then do a little bit of work if I need to, and then stop. Mm-hmm. Don't do too much work because then you're going to burn yourself out.
And you've got a lot of people, it sounds like, around you as well to help out with this, so that you're not doing everything yourself.
Absolutely. I cannot stress enough how amazing my committee is. They are insane. I would not be able to do anything without them.
Oh, that's really good. So how has the vision for this, from when you first came up with the idea, how has it changed and progressed? And I guess, is it going to keep progressing into the future?
It's changed so much. I really thought it was going to be a focus on planting gum trees and just learning about the fact that we can remake ecosystems is so exciting, because these are things that are going to last for 20, 30 years minimum and are going to make such a difference. Already, planting sites around where I live have caused such an influx of native birds.
Oh.
You need to be on the way, you need to lookouts to see them, but it's insane how much of a change that this all makes. So we're more morphing, I think, into volunteer recruitment a lot of the time as well. A lot of the friends groups have such a good handle on their area, but they lack the ability to recruit volunteers. So we're heading down that pathway. We're also stretching out into talking with Vic Parks. A lot of the bureaucracy around Victoria limits where councils can plant, and so we can act as a go-between between Vic Parks and councils and Melbourne Water as well. And we're also starting to lean toward being able to organise everything ourselves for our own planting sites and not have to involve the council fully.
Wow.
Yeah, it's expanding in many directions.
Yeah, it sounds like you have big plans as well. And you sound like such a driven person to then actually follow through with what you want to do. But I'm sure there's been a lot of challenges along the way. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. COVID was a big challenge.
I almost decided to do this at the perfect time.
Oh, yeah. No, I think we almost disbanded once or twice on the second year in 2021 of COVID because it just got ridiculous. But pushing through that was a big challenge. We had a few of the original committee members move out of Melbourne because, you know, just following passions or careers or whatever. So that was a challenge. Another challenge has been just learning all the bureaucracy stuff. There's quite a bit that goes on behind the scenes. There's quite a lot of restrictions on what we can and can't do. So just trying to navigate through there and finding a way to do the things that we're not supposed to do, but in a legal way. Definitely very challenging.
And what sort of impact do you want to have? I mean, you've touched on it a little bit, but by doing what you're doing, what impact do you want to have on everything?
Well, ideally, I'd like to drive down a suburban street and instead of seeing nature strips, see indigenous flora. But that's massively long term. I think the biggest impact we want is for the mantra of conservation to be held by the community. I strongly believe that conservation hasn't got a future if it hasn't got big community involvement. And so we just want to long term be the vessel or the vein that actually allows community to be connected to conservation or be one of. A lot of people feel disconnected. A lot of people feel like they can't trust their local government, which is fair enough, or they can't trust state government or Vic Parks or DelWop or whatever organization. And we're hoping that we can allow trust to exist both ways and also get the community really involved and really caring. If people can start to feel like stewards of the land instead of that the land owes them or vice versa, then we can see an actual change.
I love that. I really, really love that. No, it makes so much sense. It really does. So how can people get involved if they want, if they're hearing this and saying, yeah, this sounds like something I'd like to do, how can they get involved?
Very easily. They can just fill out our volunteer mailing list form or go to our Facebook page or our Instagram and give us a like or a follow or even email us the emails provided. We don't have a website yet, but they should be up next year. Any of those would be the easiest way to get involved. We are at the end of the planting season, so no more planting days. But next year, I believe May, we're going to be pushing for the first one of next year.
So when's the planting season?
Planting season is May till September. Some people push October because of summer. It's so hard on the plants.
Yeah.
Australia's summers are awful no matter where you live. So like, you want to get those plants in when it's wet and when it's going to be cold so the roots can develop. And then once summer comes or spring comes, they can grow, and summer comes, they can stop growing.
And what happens for the rest of the year? Is it all just behind the scenes trying to get everything? Yeah, trying to get everything together.
Relaxing a little bit as well. I can focus on my own garden, my own veggie patch.
Yep.
Yeah, a lot more relaxing, a lot more, at least externally it looks like we're relaxing. And we're going to be frantically emailing quite a few councils now because we're trying to spread out from just Mini Valley.
Okay. And I will pop all of your details and what you've just said, how people can contact you, in the show notes for this episode, as I always do. You have a couple of times said indigenous flora. Can you just explain to us what that is?
Yes. So this is only something I learnt 2 years ago, but there's a difference between what we call indigenous plants and native plants. So native plants tends to refer to any plants that are within Australia, and indigenous plants refer to plants that are localized to your region. That's where they evolved. That's where they're endemic to. So a good example is that technically Norfolk Island pines, which are on Norfolk Island, are native to Australia. And so you can plant them in your backyard and say, I've planted a native. But in reality, they're not native to the ecosystem. They don't belong here. They haven't evolved here. Indigenous plants are ones that have evolved here through millions of years. And this is where they belong. and they actually grow really, really well here because they're adapted to it.
I didn't know that. That's really interesting.
It's good to know. Yeah.
So a lot of people don't know that either. So thank you.
What's interesting is as well that native plants can become invasive. So you have various wattles. Yeah. There's various wattles and gums that have been planted in different locations in Australia that are now invasive to those ecosystems. They don't belong there.
Mm-hmm. So that's why you choose the indigenous plants. Is it also better for the wildlife of the area?
Oh, yeah. So much better. Something I thought was very interesting was that a community officer, a conservation officer told me, was a lot of people feel like wildlife exists in the national parks or outside of Melbourne. And it's starting to change. And the pandemic really, I think, brought along this change. But wildlife exists everywhere. Even if it lives in your house, it exists. Wildlife is living in your house. And it's just kind of hanging on by a thread, especially in Melbourne. So when we plant local species that these wildlife have also evolved alongside, it gives them a chance to flourish. And they can actually start to make a bit of a comeback, which is really nice. And you see that. It's fantastic.
Yeah. So do you go back to their sites and have a look?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we're not seeing much because there's only a couple months old, but yeah. I love going through. And it's really nice to see an empty hill, or what was an empty hill, just full of plant guards, because you know what's going to pop up in a couple of years is just going to be stunning.
It must be so exciting to actually see this come to life after a couple of years of trying and then actually seeing that, we've done the planting and this is actually going to make a difference now. It must be.
Very much so.
Very exciting.
Oh, we are. And what we planted at the latest big planting site, on the big planting day, was a lot of wildflowers as well. So this year, you're not going to see much of a showing. But next year, come springtime, the flowers should be looking beautiful. Wow. And that's not something we really associate with Australia, or Victoria especially. We don't really associate it with flowers in bloom, I find. So it's a nice change of pace.
Yeah, definitely. And if you come along to one of these planting days, say next year, do you have to be like physically fit and able to plant a lot of trees, or can you just come along and do a little bit, or how does it work?
You can come along and do nothing if you want. We have free food and free coffee and some entertainment and some board games as well. You can come along and just relax in the sun if it's sunny, we hope.
Melbourne weather.
Melbourne weather, exactly. Or you could just come and plant a few, or you could plant 100 plants if you want. It's completely up to you.
Okay. So everyone, there is no expectation. Everyone can get involved.
Everyone. We tend, because we're a younger crowd, we tend to attract, or we tend to be allocated sites that are on hills, which is not always great. They leave the easier sites for the older crowd, but that's fine.
Oh, when you say younger crowd, can you explain what you're talking about here?
A lot of friends groups are well established in Australia, and they've been established for a long time. But because of this, a lot of their members are retirees, which is obviously a great thing. There's nothing wrong with that. But it is quite restrictive on who they attract. I know very little about social media, but I've grown up with it. I can't imagine someone who didn't grow up with it, how little they know, because a lot of our generation is focused on social media, and that's the best way to attract them.
Yep. But people who of all ages can
still... Oh, yeah. Absolutely welcome.
So what do you hope for the future for yourself and for UBI?
We just hope to keep expanding, to keep learning as well, and to keep associating with more and more friends groups and community groups. We want to get to a point where people on our volunteer mailing list get emails from us about any planting days happening in their area by other groups. That would be the ultimate goal.
By other groups?
About other friends groups.
So not just yours?
Or just us. Yeah, okay. We want to be able to funnel them to other friends groups as well.
Okay.
And help them out, because we all have the same goal, right? We want to plant out as many spaces as we can for wildlife.
All work together.
All work together,
yeah. Doesn't often happen, but no. It would be great.
Yeah, and one day I'll buy a farm and I'll put 100,000 trees on it.
On a side note here, so obviously the bushfires affected you and were the catalyst for this. Do you have any plans for anything to do with the areas that were affected by the bushfires, or is that a different thing?
Yeah, it's a different... I'd love to, but a lot of those ecosystems are managed by land care groups and by Vic Parks and any national bodies. and they've got quite a few more resources than we do.
Yep.
So maybe one day in the future we'll expand outside of Melbourne, but at the moment we're kind of really focused on just doing the urban stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
And would you ever consider doing this full time, or doing it more than what you're doing now?
Yes.
Yeah.
If it gets big enough and we can start working out some kind of donations from either businesses or government or something, and I can start focusing on it a bit more, then very much so. But yeah, it doesn't have to be. I'm happy doing it completely volunteer. It's just enjoyable.
Yeah, you sound like you've got a real passion for it.
I do.
Yeah. Well, I've got one last question for you that I ask everyone at the end of these interviews. What is your best tip for making the world a better place?
I think the best thing we can do is just acknowledge that we're not separate from the environments we occupy. We operate as if we aren't a part of them, but in reality and in a harsh truth that's becoming more and more apparent, we only exist because these ecosystems allow us to.
Mm-hmm.
And if we continue to act in a way where we disregard them, it's just going to get worse for us. So if you want to make the world a better place, acknowledge that you're a part of it as opposed to something separate.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I think I was saying to you earlier that when I came up with the idea for this With Kindness series, it was going to be people who are helping other people, helping animals and helping the environment. But if you're helping the environment, then you're actually helping all three.
Absolutely.
Ties into what you've just said. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I absolutely love what you're doing. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and sharing your story and telling us all about, yeah, all the amazing things that you're doing and how people can get involved. So like I said earlier, all the details will be in the show notes. If you want to contact Alex or UBI or get involved or just go on their email list or any of that. So yeah, have a look at the show notes and thank you so much for your time today, Alex.
Thank you for having me, and I hope to see some new volunteers.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Inspirational Tales. If you're enjoying the podcast, I'd love it if you could please share it with your family and friends so that we can inspire more people. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, please don't forget to leave us a rating or a review and make sure that you have subscribed or followed the podcast on whichever platform that you are listening to it on so that you can stay up to date as new episodes are released. Thanks again, and I look forward to you joining me for the next episode of Inspirational Tales.